Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and welcome to another episode of Voices for Excellence. I'm your host, Dr. Michael Connor, CEO and founder of the Agile Evolutionary Group, and of course, the proud host of VFE. And today's guest is a legend. Yes, she's a legend within the ecosystem. We were just talking moments ago, and she's getting text messages about a bill that just passed in the House. And that's how important she is. And I'm just glad to be a part of her ecosystem. Yes, we brought her on to VFE. We secured her with her busy schedule. It is such an honor to have Ms. Erin Moat, CEO and founder of Innovate EDU. And then, of course, leading national and international work around artificial intelligence. She's probably on everybody's task force, everybody's advisory board. So I know I am doing it disservice, Erin, but it is just an honor to have you on. And then also too, Erin, thank you. I want to say this to my audience. Thank you for the work that you're doing. Thank you for trusting me to be on the advisory board of National AI Literacy Day, which we are going to be talking about. And to my audience, please celebrate National AI Literacy Day. Erin's going to get into a deeper context with that day, but it is going to be Friday, this Friday coming up, March 27th. So without further ado, Erin, how are you?
Hi, Michael. You are, first of all, way too kind. I should be starting with gratitude for you and all the work that you're doing in leading conversations, vital conversations in our ecosystem. And I think really doing a calling in of folks from across many different silos. So thank you. And thanks for being a member of the advisory board for National AI Literacy Day. That's a space where we need to do more calling in of parents, students, communities to ask and provide them with resources so that they can really understand this arrival technology as it comes into not just education, but everyday life. So mutual gratitude. And also, that's a lot of hype. I'll bring you with me when I go places. How about that?
Absolutely. And to my audience, I remember when I first met Erin a couple years ago, we were in New York City, Erin. And I'm going to be honest with you, I was fanboying you, but you would have never known.
That's so kind.
Man, but Erin, like I said, I admire the work that you're doing. You know, a lot of the guidance, a lot of the information that's coming out of Washington, across the country, across the world, I look to you to get that information. So again, like I said, please, you know, we're going to just kind of unpack.
Yeah, let's jump in.
Jump right in and then talk about National AI Literacy Day. But Erin, everybody knows that you are a voice in the pre-K-12 continuum with regards to AI and technology, a policy strategist and an advocate for future-driven systems. But Erin, you've probably never been asked this question, but what song describes your leadership work in this most important paradigm of education?
You know, it depends what hour it is, to be honest. I mean, because I think when we talk about AI, we're talking about the promise and the peril of this technology. And I think, you know, one of the things, Michael, when I think about sort of where we're at in these conversations is, you know, there's folks who are, like, would categorize themselves as doomers. They would categorize, there's other folks who would be accelerationists. And then I'm sort of firmly in the middle, which is a scout. Right? Somebody who is trying to manage both the promise and the peril, not a doomer, but not an accelerationist. And so, you know, I'm so elated by how many people are joining that work. And so maybe I would go with like happy as my song, because I think I am happy to see our space responding and leading in this urgent call to really think about what's the future we want. What are the types of learning experiences we want young people to have? How do we even expand that conversation to the types of learning experiences, access and opportunity that we know folks are going to need who might be being displaced by AI right now in the job market? And so people think that's like a weird choice. You know, I honestly was vacillating between that and Skillet. So like that's the spectrum that I feel, you know, around this work. But again, it's about that balancing that promise and the peril. So ask me, you know, in next hour and it might be something different.
Absolutely. Erin, I'm glad that you said the song Happy, right? And I always say this to everybody, whether it be domestically or internationally, I'm happy that the conversation is happening about AI, the conversation of being able to look at the model differently and to integrate, to attempt to integrate strategically. What I'm saying is this ubiquitous thread that we cannot ignore anymore, which is around, you know, disruptive technologies and artificial intelligence. And I really want to underscore what you're saying is that balance. I always talk about we have to create that polarity within our instructional systems, within our operating model, to really look at how we're going to create these future-driven systems or look at these disruptive learning environments, specifically for our learners, our new learners, Generation Alpha and Generation Beta. We can't continue the legacy. We can't continue the archaic model where now we're living in this technological driven world. I always like to say the 22nd century, but your work at Innovate EDU and many other national roles really is defining AI policy, structure, content, awareness, capabilities. Now, first, can you walk us through the story and the continued work of Innovate EDU? And then second, can you couple this where, how is your nonprofit addressing specific gaps within this educational ecosystem to really transform the learning trajectory for Generation Alpha and Beta?
Yeah, well, first of all, I just want to acknowledge the incredible team I have at Innovate EDU. I have this incredible set of folks who's along with me on this journey. And every time I get a chance to talk about what rock stars they are, I want to say what an incredible team we have and what rock stars they are. You know, I think at Innovate EDU, which, you know, we deliberately structured as a house of brands, not a branded house. So folks know our alliances. They know Project Unicorn. They know the Pathways Alliance. They know EdSafe AI. And we've deliberately built the organization to have those different brands, because what we are looking for at Innovate EDU is, how do we find common ground to work together? We have a whole manifesto on the Innovate EDU website around finding the 80% common, which means, like, in uncommon alliances, which is what we build, you're not usually, it's very rare to get 100% agreement. I'm not saying we haven't ever gotten there, but it's, you know, the number of times I can say we got to 100% agreement across all of our stakeholders is probably, I could count it on my two hands in 10 years, just to be honest. And so, you know, we really don't strive for that. We don't strive for 100% agreement. We really strive for, like, what's the 80% common? What is the place that we can find common ground across geographies, across political and social divides? How do we really think about building trust between actors who don't usually sit at the same table? How do we architect experiences to build that trust across policy, technology development, and practice? And so that's everything from communities of practice that we learn, like we sort of learn and build together with the ecosystem, to things like the EdSafe AI Industry Council, to the board that you're sitting on for National AI Literacy Day, which has higher ed and workforce and students and industry. It really is this idea that, you know, we got to build this connective tissue in order to move the ecosystem forward. And that's a lot of silo busting. So at Innovate EDU, I think we're known for being really an organization that busts silos. And sometimes, even in political spaces, gets folks together on issues like chatbots and companions and the safety and privacy of kids, and thinking through chatbots and companions in AI right now, who don't traditionally work together. So, you know, it's not a common thing to see Josh Hawley and Chris Murphy sitting together and advocating for the same thing. And I think those are places where we believe we have far more in common in terms of sort of what we need to advance in terms of kids' safety and data privacy than what separates us. And so how do we find that common ground? How do we build that trust? And then, you know, I think we are trying to push people to interrogate the system that we have right now. I just wrote a piece, maybe we can put it in the show notes, for EdTech Digest about the difference between an arrival technology and an adoption technology. And I find this frame really, really helpful when we think about AI. You know, AI is an arrival technology, like electricity or like the internet. It is going to fundamentally reorder the way we work, we live, we learn, we even relate to each other. And so it's like, again, we don't work the same way now that we have electricity as folks did 100 years ago. And so that's, you know, this is the type of things that we need to really think about. But arrival technologies also are maximally disruptive to existing systems. Your ability to have access to an arrival technology is often defined by your access to wealth or economic opportunity. We've learned a lot about arrival technologies. And so how do we, with that frame, rather than adoption technology, something that's like cryptocurrency or whether that's like VR, those are adoption technologies. Those are trying to fit in an existing system. AI is not trying to fit into the system. It is fundamentally reordering our enterprise and our education. And so that's something that as we think about the experiences for Generation Alpha and Generation Beta, I think we really need to interrogate the types of learning experiences that we're creating for young people. And what does that look like? What does that feel like? How do we think about nurturing metacognition? How do we think about nurturing the ability to work in multifunctional teams where one of those teammates is AI? And that's the way I think we need to be thinking about learning experiences. And I just want to draw for your listeners the distinction that they don't hear me saying schooling experiences. I'm saying learning experiences, because I think we have a lot of conversations about schooling, and that's the wrong unit. We need to be having conversations about learning. And learning can happen at a children's museum. Learning can happen in a work-based learning experience. Learning can happen in partnership with our parents and our community members. And so what does that look like? How do we think about this idea where we're moving from what you know to what can you create with what you know?
Aaron, that right there is probably a 5-minute keynote response that I think everybody needs to play back. Aaron, to my audience, Aaron, we use this as a professional learning tool, a synchronous mechanism for them to be able to go back, really customized, personalized to their practices. And Aaron, the distinction is just so meticulously aligned and stated to my audience, the difference between arrival artificial intelligence and adoption artificial intelligence. And Aaron, and I think that, you know, there's been some misconceptions, you know, with regards to when AI systems, i.e., the adoption mechanism, they're already like, oh, we got AI. I'm like, well, you know, AI is supposed to change the fundamental experience, change the fundamental systems of how the operating model operationalizes itself. Moreover, it's supposed to, as you stated, eliminate those silos to be able to create dynamic expertise amongst organization or stakeholders, just like you said, 80% common. And you do that within Innovate EDU by bringing domain experts to ensure that dynamic expertise is around the problem of practice. Well stated, silo busting and integrity. I've been saying we need to be interrogating the model in this synthetic fashion where now we're looking at how we're operationalized arrival AI, disruptive in context, and then also with the support with that. I just love talking to you. I absolutely love talking to you. I wish I could have 5 hours with you, but I know you're going to fly somewhere else. But yes, to my audience, Aaron, I'm excited. This Friday, March 27th, 2026 is National AI Literacy Day. And again, thank you for identifying me as an advisor. I was like, why isn't Aaron picking me? I'm not worthy, right? But Aaron, you know, I really want to first enhance my audience capacity so they can join National AI Day, this AI Literacy Day, this Friday that's coming up. But first, at its foundational or its basic level, the rudiments of it, what is National AI Literacy Day? So we can create level set, national level set for this, and the core objectives within the ecosystem so that now districts and classrooms can be a part of this historical event.
Yeah, I mean, we started National AI Literacy Day 3 years ago, and it hasn't shifted in the sense that we're still have a lot of communities who have questions around what is AI at the core. And so this is really a day that is part of our larger movement to build AI literacy, not just in our classrooms, but really in our communities. So with over 100 supporting partners, with over 80 events happening across the country in local communities and some signature events, professional development, it really is meant to be an entry point for those conversations around what is AI and how do we build basic AI literacy for every person in our community, every learner. And that is parents, and that is policymakers, and that is students. And I think when I think about the type of movement we want to create, we want to create a movement where folks have entry points across the spectrum to build their own capacity, knowledge, and expertise around AI, to be able to engage in learning experiences that are both tech-enabled and non-tech-enabled. So there's tons of activities on the National AI Literacy Day website for educators where you don't have to touch a computer. You don't have to touch AI. You can think about things like categorization. But it really is about how do we create a day that gives folks an anchor point to a larger movement around AI literacy in our communities. And I want to say something that's really important about AI literacy. This is the ability to understand how this technology works, to interrogate the technology, to equip yourself to be a critical consumer of this technology, to be able to equip yourself to be a creator with this technology, and to be able to answer really important questions about whether or not you want to be using AI in your classroom, you want to be using AI in your schools for the types of learning experiences you want to create. Again, promise and peril. We're not accelerationists. We're not doomers. We're really in this scout. We want everyone to be a scout about this technology, to be able to interrogate the promise and peril. And so when I think about why it's so important that we think about AI literacy at a national scale, is for me, it's a foundational literacy. It has to be across every subject. It's as important in our English language arts classrooms and our science classrooms as it is in our computer science classrooms. And we need to be building the capacity of our educators to be ambassadors of AI literacy. We need to be doing the same thing with our parents and the same thing with our students. I'm going to say a hard thing here. I don't think we did that well in social media, and we're paying the consequences right now. So I want us to wake up and say, on this, we're going to do it differently and we're going to do something. And that something can be a 15-minute activity in a classroom. It can be joining a professional development. It can be signing up to spread the word about National AI Literacy Day. It's not too late to get engaged. Even though it's this Friday, you can still get engaged. You can still be part of this movement. And one of the other really exciting things, which was at the pushing of the advisory board, is this idea that this is a movement, not just a day. Well, the day will be a rallying point. Curriculum, professional development, resources are going to stay up all year round. And so you can really think about, how am I using these free resources, this free curriculum, to really infuse this type of learning experience into my classroom?
Well stated, right? And I remember, participating in multiple advisory board meetings. And that was one of the critical underpinnings that we focused on, that it is a movement. It's not one day event where we celebrate AI literacy, right? But it is a movement, this continuous movement that really catches synergy, catches energy around the country to create coherence. Aaron, I really love what you stated, right? And we had multiple discussion points at our advisory meeting with regards to having entry points for AI literacy around the multiple tiers of the stakeholders within the education ecosystem, i.e. policymakers, parents, educators, leaders, so foundational that we create that coherence, going back again to foundational literacy. Aaron, I've been hanging out with you and the advisory board way too much. But again, please, to my audience, this Friday, National AI Literacy Day, really want to now start this movement, this intentional movement, but the differentiated entry points of where you're at, and also the variety of different stakeholders that we're serving within the ecosystem. And Aaron, I really loved how you defined AI literacy, right? It's multi-tenant, it's multifunctional, and it's different from every stakeholder group, but the same, under the same auspice, to create that coherence. Again, using that word intentionally, a movement, not a day. But Aaron, you know, you're, like I said, your resume just speaks for itself, right? But being a thought leader for, now this is big time, okay? Big, in my eyes, Aaron, in my eyes, right? You're a thought leader for the Forbes Nonprofit Council. Now, I know you're bringing in really in-depth perspectives, ideologies, concepts around AI, AI literacy, adoption AI versus arrival AI, the distinction between that. But what perspectives have you brought to the Forbes Nonprofit Council that every pre-K through 12 stakeholder, policymaker, legislator, and leadership must underscore with education and technology? And then two, how are your perspectives from the Forbes Nonprofit Council closing gaps from ideation to implementation?
Yeah, well, one of the things you have to do when you're on that council is write. So, you know, I have to write every, you know, couple weeks. So there's a lot for your listeners to look at in terms of, you know, the things that I'm trying to bring to the conversation in the council. I'll name a couple, and there's some pieces that follow. One is this distinction between schooling and learning experiences. I think if we're really going to do that, we have to have a calling in, not just of the K-12 and higher ed community, but our workforce colleagues, to really think through, you know, what do we want, not just learning experiences to look like, but how do we equip our young people with the types of sort of continuous opportunities to reskill, retrain, and to be like lifelong learners. So, and that's not just a word, but like, what are the systems and structures, means and methods that we have to support folks in doing that? The second thing, you know, is to just confess that I don't know everything and to have some humility. You know, I'm a mom of 2 kids, 8 and 10. So maybe like some of your listeners, I'm having to navigate choices in my own home around screen time and around AI and around technology and around Roblox. And so I don't have all the answers. And you know, in some of my pieces, I just wrote a piece, Chicken Nuggets to Chatbots. I talk about the conversations I'm having, you know, with boardrooms and with policymakers, and then how I'm having to have those conversations with my own kids, 10 and 8. And just for folks, I think one of the things about AI is like, sometimes people don't want to say like, I don't know, or I'm uncertain. And the reality is, even people like me who are an enterprise architect, I'm a technologist, I've been in tech policy for 20 years. There's a lot that I'm uncertain about. And that's both in my, you know, own home and in the quote unquote thought leadership I'm doing. So I have a lot of educated hypotheses about the types of investments that we need to be making, but there's still a lot that's going to shift and change. And that's the nature of an arrival technology, is that there is some uncertainty, and folks should be like both, you know, I think comfortable in that unknown, and humble enough to say that. And so I'm really trying to both bring expertise and humility in those conversations. And then the last thing I'll say about that work is, you know, I think it's really important in the space of humility, and I actually just wrote about this, that, you know, if you make a mistake or if you don't know something, you live in the spirit of radical candor. It's a core value at Innovate EDU. People often laugh at me that I wrote it into our core values, like culture of thrift. Radical candor is right there. But, you know, I think we're going to make some mistakes in navigating this technology. We're going to try things because we're brave and we're courageous, and they're not going to work. Innovation moves at the speed of trust across every sector. And trust is built when you both say what you're going to do, name your intention, but also when, if you make a mistake, you say, we didn't do this well. And that's something that I think is really important, not just in AI, but in our space. And so those are very human things to say, but I think, you know, we come to this work as humans who are deeply anchored in building trust, building relationships. And that's the way we build those uncommon alliances.
Yeah. Objectively and subjectively, Erin, one of the best solutionist, strategists, and technologists in the world, you are. That was, in my opinion, your second 5-minute keynote speech within this. And Erin, what you have is funny because just this week, last week, I was unpacking the book Radical Candor with somebody as we were talking about, now I'm going to use arrival adoption of processes of really disrupting the system. And, you know, you talked about reskilling, and I was reading somewhere, and don't quote me on this, but I believe if I remember the number correctly, rooted in rote memorization, 58% of the current workforce is going to have to reskill by 2030. And when I said that, I'm like, wow, 58% just reading that data. But what resonates with me is what you specifically stated. And I'm going to really highlight this quote and, of course, you know, give you credit for this. Innovation moves at the speed of trust. That, and to my audience, I want to say that one more time. Innovation moves at the speed of trust. And that is so true with that. And it's compelling because, you know, now we're living in what I call this AC stage of education after COVID-19, i.e. the intelligent stage with artificial intelligence and technologies and the disruptive nature of it. We really have to undergird trust in order to really innovate EDU, but innovate our ecosystem strategically. And Erin, you know, I know you go across the world, you know, with policymakers, legislators, educators, students, you know, really leveraging National AI Literacy Day. But Erin, can you just give my audience some examples of successful integration when it comes to technology and AI within the learning ecosystem so that now we're very intentional to interrogate the actual learning experience of the students? So now we can start shifting away from this antiquated process of quote unquote schooling. And also, how should leaders storytell a vision, a compelling vision around artificial intelligence, successful integration within their learning organizations and communities?
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing that I would say is that we are just at the very beginning thinking through what this is going to look like. And even the foundational models are learning about what it means to learn. So I also want to name that, you know, many of the foundational AI models right now are built around task replacement. They are not built around learning. And so that's a shift we have to make in our space. And I already see folks leaning in from the foundational models in order to interrogate their own processes and their own questions. So I want to draw that distinction for your audience real quick, because I think it's really important. All the foundational models right now are evaluated on benchmarks that are about replacing tasks and replacing humans. And for me, that's not the vision that I want with AI. I want them to augment learning. I want them to be able to support and appropriately scaffold using the learning sciences, our young people, if it's using it for a personalized tutor, if folks are using AI to dive deep into a different subject. And so we have some work to do around architecting the technology, the models, and the experiences that we need to have. But let me talk about some of the promising signs. So I'm going to give three examples. One, I'm not going to name the district because I don't have their permission to name them. But one of the things that I'm really excited about that I've seen in terms of the use of AI is actually about expanding the aperture of opportunity and access to young people. So I'm going to tell you about this district. You know, there was a district leader who had a hypothesis that using just humans to figure out who gets access to magnet classes or AP classes or differentiated learning experiences within their district was leading to selection bias from humans. And they had an educated hypothesis that it's important to keep those humans in the loop and allow teachers and educators and principals to recommend students for those opportunities, but also to potentially look at data that was masking gender and race and other dimensions of student identity, and to say, is this student capable of doing this level of work? And what happened is they used AI to do this work, that to just look at the data in a blind way using appropriate masking technologies, removing personally identifiable information. And here's what they found, was that there was a significant group of students who were traditionally excluded from AP and magnet classes, who tended to be students with disabilities, who tended to be English language learners, and who tended to be young women, who were excluded from these opportunities. And it was selection bias. And then when these educators were confronted with the raw data and had to interrogate their own biases within the system, they dramatically expanded the aperture of who had access to new opportunities. So that's taking an arrival technology and harnessing it for good. So that's one example. The second example is, you know, a school district who's using this technology in order to be able to make it easier for parents to get their kids to school. So, you know, this is a use of AI that is not touching students or educators in any way. It's only for administrators, but it's chewing and looking at bus routes to see, and traffic patterns and other types of asymmetrical data, analyzing that and saying, is there a better way to route our buses so that kids are waiting at bus stops less, they have less commute time, and we're able to be more efficient in the way we're getting kids to school. So there's an operational use case, there's an access and opportunity use case. And then the last one I'm going to talk about, which I think is really important, is something that's deeply meaningful to me. So our colleagues out of University of Buffalo, in partnership with the National Science Foundation and the Institute of Education Sciences, are rolling out a set of tools that will allow every classroom in this country to use AI to universally screen for dyslexia. My son, Robert, who's 10, has dyslexia, and it took me 3 years to get him diagnosed. And I am a fierce advocate, activist, educator, you know, like I know all this, I know the system, and it still took me 3 years to navigate to get him from diagnosis to appropriate scaffold. So I can't imagine what it would be for a parent or a young person who's having to navigate that system without all the privilege that I have. So what would it look like if we could use AI to universally screen all students before second grade for dyslexia, so that we could be able to identify the reading difficulties? And what's great about this technology is it uses AI to do this. It can screen a classroom in less than 30 minutes. And then it invites a human in the loop to, it over-identifies kids, because dyslexia and reading disabilities can manifest in lots of different ways. So the AI says, we think there's something here. And then an educator comes back in and screens those students who the system flagged. An educator can also use their judgment to do additional screening of students. So it's not replacing an educator. It's not replacing the process that we have of educator judgment. But what it's saying is, we're going to do this universally. We're going to use it to save teachers time. We're going to use it to give kids access to opportunities and scaffolds that ultimately, I think, will help us move and turn that very concerning literacy trend in our country in the right direction. And I think that's the type of system approaches that we need to be taking on. Hope those are three good examples that resonate with your audience.
Beautiful, Erin, because I think you gave, and why I say this intentionally is because we've been seeing, and universally you've seen it, Erin, that equity has been polarized, right, and politicized in this context. But the three examples that you provided roots, it grounds the word equity obsolete, this polarization or this politicization that now we're seeing how that word is being utilized. And to my audience, those three varying examples define equity without politics, right? Creates opportunity and access. If we simply just replace equity with opportunity and access, I don't think we would have this political issue around the word. But Aaron did define equity with AI, creating opportunity and access in a variety of different contexts. Really, really appreciate that, Aaron. And then at the outset, right, the really creating this level set around foundational models, where what I loved, where now we need to really focus on how we're augmenting the learning, how we're scaffolding intentionally within our classrooms. You brought in research around the learning sciences, really undergird a lot of my work with regards to the learning sciences, and try to integrate that with the system sciences as well. But Aaron, opportunity and access, and what really got me, whoever that district is, I would love to meet that superintendent, eliminating selection biases.
Yeah.
That's what we call get the dirt off the shoulders on that.
That's right. That's right. And actually, I think there's a vision around this technology that's incredibly bipartisan. So maybe it would surprise some of your listeners to hear that probably one of the biggest advocates right now, equity and consequential decision making, is Governor DeSantis in Florida, who has put forward some of the most well-meaning legislation around making sure that on consequential decisions, whether you have access to a loan, a mortgage, admission to a college or university, that's not a decision that should solely be made by an algorithm. It should be made with a human in the loop. And so the other thing I will say about all three of those examples is they're about resources. You know, we are constrained in our space by resources. And we need to be asking questions. If we want to ask questions about access and opportunity, we need to be asking questions about resources and resource allocation. And what could make us better and smarter around how we allocate resources, whether that's bus routes or screening for dyslexia? Your ability to get access in this country to a great education, unfortunately, is still, you know, the purview of your zip code in most circumstances. We got to break that.
Absolutely. And access and opportunity, how we're breaking that resource allocation. Aaron, profound, absolutely profound with that last response. Now, last question, Aaron, but I don't know if anybody within the ecosystem or the ecosphere has ever held Aaron Moat the three words, but I'm going to try. Nobody listens to me. Nobody listens, but it's worth a try. So Aaron, before we leave today, before National AI Literacy Day on Friday, what three words do you want to leave the audience, our audience today, with regards to policy guidelines and strategic thinking for technology and AI integration in the AC stage of education?
I'm going to do it in two.
Aaron, you are a true disruptor. I've done this for 4 years, four seasons. Nobody has done it in two words.
Yeah. Do something.
Yeah. There we go. Aaron, that's a mic drop. Do something. Absolutely. Please elaborate on that.
Well, I think we can be paralyzed by change. We can be paralyzed by fear. We can be paralyzed by uncertainty, but we don't need to be. Do something. Sign up to be a supporting partner of National AI Literacy. Download a lesson. Attend a PD session. Have this conversation at your kitchen table with your kids or on the softball field with your friends. Do something.
I love it, Aaron. To my audience, do something. Mic drop. I should just end the episode right now. Aaron, thank you so much for coming on EFE.
Thanks for having me.
Providing my audience with everything. Now, Aaron, if anybody wants to get in contact with Innovate EDU, or download any of your papers that you're writing, or just now, we're roughly about 4 days away from National AI Literacy Day, how would we be able to obtain that information?
Yeah, go to AIliteracyday.org. There you can sign up to be a supporting partner, access curriculum, sign on to one of those professional development. And also you'll see a map there of events that might be happening in your community. So you don't have to host an event, do something and go to an event in your local community. There's eight right now, there's 80 events, there'll be more, but again, AIliteracyday.org. If you want to get in touch with the work we're doing on EdSafe and EdSafe AI, the alliance that advocates for the safe, accountable, fair, transparent, and efficacious use in education, you can check that out on either by going to the EdSafe website, you can just Google it, or you know, you can access some of the resources that we're putting out there for school districts and states in particular by going to AIPolicyLab.org. There you can get information, policies. You should see those as starter dough. Don't copy paste. Really use those as starter dough. But tons of resources for you, not just around like thought papers, but then like how do you actually use them? Procurement checklists, mandated reporter guidance. We're putting stuff out all the time. And then I try really hard to keep folks informed about what's happening in the world. So go ahead and follow me on LinkedIn, Erin Mote. It's pretty easy. I'm the blonde in the leather jacket. You know, follow me on LinkedIn and follow any of our alliances. We try really hard to not just share information from us, but share information from this community, this big tent we've built in terms of movement building for AI literacy and beyond.
Erin, I read a lot of your work, receive a lot of information and updates from your social media pages, what you generate for, you know, for Forbes, all of that, Erin. I pay attention to it because I consider you, like I said, one of the individual architects of really now framing this AI focus, AI adoption, arrival adoption within the ecosystem. And Erin, on behalf of me, listeners, thank you for all the work that you're doing. Continue, please. You know, you're really putting a lot of this, I like to say, disparate ideas, interpretations, and creating an intentional equilibrium around AI within the United States and more broadly internationally. So, Erin, thank you for coming on VFE.
Thanks so much. And again, thank you for all of your work on the National AI Literacy Day Advisory Board. We're so grateful to have folks like you who make us smarter about the work we're doing.
So Erin, what I'm going to do is take that little piece in the whole episode and just use that for the whole week. Erin, thank you so much.
Yeah, absolutely.
Bottom of my heart. And on that note, everybody, onward and upward. Have a great evening.